The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is June 26th, 2009. This is episode 183, and my name is Jules Cisek, filling in for Bob Hayes. What's on the plate for today? Well, we've got... First, we're going to start with Adam Silver and I chatted yesterday. Adam is involved with Riders for Health, and he's going to talk about Day of the Stars event at Laguna Seca, and about an auction event with Randy Mamola that's happening on Saturday. That's tomorrow, June 27th, between noon and 4 in Redwood City, California. If you are anywhere within riding distance of Redwood City, I highly recommend showing up. Randy Mamola, Dakota Mamola, and a bunch of other people whose faces and voices you might recognize are going to be there. After that, we're going to have a call with Jim Race. We talk about Misano World Superbikes last weekend, and do a little bit of a preview of Assen World Super, MotoGP this coming weekend, as well as Dunnington World Superbikes. So it's going to be a lot of racing, obviously. It was a pretty good call with Jim. And finally, I get to talk to Michael Lentz, father of Peter Lentz. If you remember, Peter Lentz is the 12-year-old racer extraordinaire. He had a pretty bad accident at PIR on May 31st. And we're going to talk to Michael about the recovery, which is, I'm going to spoil it. It's just going really well. But I hope you enjoy the show. Okay, this is Jules Cisek here with Adam Silver at, where are we at?
Well, we're technically at Cisco.
Okay, that's right.
It's technically where we are. But it used to be Pure Digital, and, you know, it's my work. So it's where we make the flip video camcorder.
Right on.
Although we don't actually make it here. But anyway, never mind. We digress.
So Adam's going to talk about Adam and I are going to talk about the Riders for Health event that's happening, tomorrow as you're listening, on Saturday the 27th at MKD Motors in Redwood City, and also a little bit about Day of the Stars.
Okay.
So, first of all, the event is from 12 to 4, I believe?
That's right, yeah. It's from noon to 4 at MDK Motorsports in Redwood City, which is on 2nd Street at Bay Road.
Yeah, we'll put a link up to the directions. Okay. And basically, you guys should all come and check out the meeting. We're going to have Randy Mamola there with his son Dakota.
Indeed.
Anybody else that might be interested
Any other people that are going to be there? Is that what you're asking? Yeah, yeah. So Elena Myers is going to be there.
Okay,
so
cool.
I don't know if you know who Elena Myers is, but she's... I think she's 14 now.
Yeah, yeah. She's really, really fast.
She has made mincemeat of me at Thunder Hill on many occasions while I've been on a much larger bike, and she's very fast. So, and she's a sweet person too. So, met her and her dad a couple of times at track days.
Excellent.
So she's going to be there, and wow, who else is going to be? I think there are going to be a couple of other racer types there as well. But I guess, you know, one of the most exciting things about the event is that we have some really good prizes that we're going to be raffling and auctioning. And we're going to have a live auction as well. We decided to do a live auction.
You have an auctioneer?
No, I'm not. There's a guy, actually, the guy who's going to be the auctioneer is a guy called Joaquin, and he is the regional rep for Tucker Rocky, which is the... You know, one of the motorcycle distribution companies. Anyway, so he stepped up to the plate and said he was going to be our auctioneer, which is great because he's going to be very familiar with all the stuff that we're going to be auctioning off. And we've got a lot of autographed merchandise. We've got shirts and caps and other things that Randy Mamola is bringing over that he got autographed, and he's getting more stuff autographed. Or he got more stuff autographed last weekend, I should say. So there's going to be lots of good stuff. And then the other thing that we're going to do is we're going to auction off a two-up ride with Randy. Now, there's one little caveat to that, because whenever people hear about a two-up ride with Randy Mamola, they just automatically assume it's on the MotoGP bike, you know, going around Laguna Seca or something. Well, it's not. It's going to be on a scooter going around the block.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
On the spot?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, whoever's won the auction with Randy, I don't know if it's going to be a scooter. They'll have a two-wheeled vehicle of some sorts there, and... you know, we actually, the background to this is we wanted to auction off a real two-up ride on the GP bike, but the logistics to organize that is just very, very difficult and actually completely out of Randy's control. So we thought we'd sort of have fun with it and, you know, auction off like a scooter ride around the block at
the
end
of the
day.
I'm sure you can still do a couple of wheelies and stoppies.
Well, we'll see. I don't know.
Wheelies, easy. Stoppies, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So that should be fun, too. And nice. We've got our barbecue guys coming in to, you know, do some catering, and all the proceeds from the barbecue and the raffle and everything is going to go... all the proceeds from the day is going to Riders for Health, so should be a really... fun
great.
Event. We've got a DJ, and Randy's going to get up and make a little presentation about riders, and should be a really fun and exciting event.
And you've been getting more and more involved with riders yourself.
I have.
Say a little bit about that, maybe.
So, you know, I lived in the Bay Area for almost 20 years, from England originally, as you can probably tell, and always loved motorcycles, and I just found out about riders probably about a year ago, and actually I found out about it from just sort of listening to Randy's commentary on some of the Eurosport coverage of MotoGP races, and
dearly missed coverage.
Thank you very much. Yes, I did some research and read up about Riders for Health, and just got really inspired by it. So I contacted the folks in the UK and just said, hey, you know, I live in Northern California. How can I get involved? What can I do? And basically, Riders for Health in the U.S. doesn't really have a lot of structure or organization, I should say. There's one full-time Riders for Health employee in Chicago. And, you know, Riders for Health is set up as an official U.S. registered 501c3 charity organization. And then, aside from that, the only other folks that are involved with riders in the U.S. is guys like me who are just volunteers. There's a bunch of folks down in L.A., including Don Emdy, who you met when he was out for the Tri-Valley event.
Yep.
And a couple of other folks. And we basically have decided in the U.S. that we want to build across the country a series of riders chapters, regional riders chapters. And we're keen to talk to people who are interested in Riders for Health and want to do the same kinds of things that we're doing up here in Northern California to set up chapters. And basically what that is, you know, I just kind of went through my Rolodex of people that I know involved in motorcycles, which is, you know, I know quite a few of the local motorcycle shops and the track day companies. And I've gone and talked to them and told them the rider's story. And as a result, we've managed to organize some events and some fundraising activities like this MDK event, although I would say that that's kind of a special event because Randy's going to be there.
Yep.
You know, there's really two objectives to the US activities. The first objective is to simply raise awareness with people about what Riders for Health is all about. And the second objective is to raise money. Like I said, the way that we've done that here in Northern California is we've done one event with Zoom Zoom Track Days, which was kind of an event that ran over a few months. We actually ran a raffle that ran for a few months with Zoom Zoom. And at each of their track days from like February to the end of May, they went and sold raffle tickets to folks in the paddock that were attending the track day. And they hit up their sponsors for a bunch of prizes. And then we drew the raffle and gave away all the prizes at the end of May. And then Tri-Valley Moto is a dealership in Livermore, BMW, Triumph, and KTM, and What am I missing?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. There we go, Tri Valley.
We played the interview with
Don. That was a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
So we did that, and then, you know, we've got this event with Randy, and once all the excitement of Laguna Seca is all done, I'm going to get our little group of volunteers together that I've managed to pool, and we're going to talk about some ideas for some events in the second half of the year.
One of the coolest things about riders is actually the that you made a great presentation at the Tri Valley place, which is that it's a charity that where you really know where your money's going, and it's very easy to say I'm putting in this much and that's going to do exactly this. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I don't remember the exact figures, but like $3,500 will get an entire like mechanic set up to be able to fix these bikes, which is one of the most important things is that these bikes have to be running all the time,
right?
In some pretty severe conditions,
yeah.
Into some very very difficult to reach places. That's the whole point of the organization. So it's for motorcyclists, it's very easy to see that translation of the motorsport aspect and the money going to the right place. You don't have to worry about you're not thinking about like, well, how's my money going to get spent? You know. It's really great, very well organized charity.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I mean, it's quite singularly focused on here's a whole bunch of medical supplies and expertise, and then here's a whole bunch of people that are physically disconnected from what they need, and Riders bridges that gap. That's basically what it does, and because of the fact that there's no transportation infrastructure in the countries that they operate in, motorcycles are the ideal vehicle to bridge that gap, and so that's what they do.
We're going to see some movies tomorrow.
If I get the DVD on time, I'm hoping tomorrow. Oh, you mean on? Oh, yes, tomorrow is in terms of your listeners.
Yes,
because they'll hear this on Friday. So we have a new Riders for Health. It's like a little 5-minute introduction to Riders for Health, and actually, your listeners can go watch it if you're not going to be at the event. It's if you go to youtube.com/ Riders for Health TV. It's the main clip that they've put up there now that is a little 5-minute piece that talks about the work of riders, and we're going to have that clip and play that at the event on Saturday. But, you know, I encourage people to go and do their own research and see the clip online. But,
just do a quick rundown of Day of the Stars, which is like the big event for the year. Right?
Yeah. So let's give you some background to Day of Stars, first of all. So Riders for Health, as I mentioned before, is a charity that is primarily based in the UK. That's where their large office is. And because of the Randy Mamola connection and the fact that Andrew and Barry Coleman, who are the co-founders of Riders, have been involved with motorcycling and motorcycle racing pretty much their whole lives, they have obviously a very strong connection with MotoGP, and they're the official charity of FIM and MotoGP. And in the UK, they, as part of the Moto Grand Prix weekend, at Donington, for the past few years, I'm not exactly sure how long, but quite a few years, they've had an event on the Thursday of that weekend called Day of Champions. And Day of Champions has become, an institution as far as the UK British Grand Prix is concerned. And they attract thousands of people, show up for Day of Champions. And the business model is kind of different because they charge £25 or something to attend, which is about $40, and you get a day's activities at the track, and then at the end of the day they have this auction where they get the MotoGP riders to show up with boots and gloves and helmets and leathers and any kind of knickknacks they can find, and they autograph them and they auction them off. So in the US, starting 2 years ago at Laguna, they wanted to do an event, I think the question was, well, exactly how many people would show up? So they basically decided to apply kind of a different theme to the day, And instead of trying to attract thousands of people, they wanted to keep it more of an exclusive event. So they've done this event for the past couple of years, and just this year we decided to give it a name, which we thought was a good idea. So we have officially called it Day of Stars, and your listeners can go to dayofstars.org for information about the day. But essentially what it is, it's not cheap. It's $500 to attend for the day, although that is a tax-deductible donation. And you basically show up, we'll have breakfast, then we'll set off and do a little street ride down to Carmel Valley. And then we get back and we have lunch with Randy Mamola and Wayne Rainey and Eddie Lawson, and Kenny Roberts Sr. will be there, and Andrew and Barry will be there, and, you know, it'll basically be a nice catered lunch at the VIP area at Turn 4. And then after lunch, we basically get a private tour of the MotoGP garages at Laguna, which if you've been to the MotoGP at Laguna, which I'm sure many of your listeners have, that's kind of a difficult thing, a difficult area to get to. Even if you have a paddock pass, you can't get to the MotoGP garages. Yep. So that will be really cool. And then we do a couple of parade laps around the track you know, get to stop on the track and take a bunch of photographs and stuff like that and just kind of have fun.
And we're going to be out there with some MotoGP guys.
Yeah, I'm guessing it depends on who they pull in. I understand, it's my first year of this event, so I wasn't involved with it last year because I didn't know about riders, but... as I understand it, it's all about the availability of the MotoGP riders on that particular day. And on Thursday, there's no motorcycles on the track, so usually the availability of the riders is pretty good. But as you can imagine, you know, if Valentino Rossi or one of the other big riders is trying to work out some technical issues with their bike or whatever, you know, they just can't, you know, compromise potentially a result on Sunday for spending time with us on Thursday. But as I understand it from last year, they were able to get a lot of the riders involved with the day in one form or another. The other thing that's happening, so that kind of pretty much is the way the Day of Stars is structured. But the other thing that's happening is that there's actually going to be a go-kart race on Thursday afternoon, is being organized by Laguna. And that's at 3:30 on Thursday afternoon. And it's going to be a go-kart race between Eddie Lawson, Wayne Rainey, Kenny Roberts Sr., and Valentino Rossi. And I guess Wayne Rainey and I think Eddie Lawson as well are like big-time go-kart racers.
Yeah.
So that should be really fun. That should be really interesting to watch that. And right after that is when we're going to do the auction. So we, similar to Day of Champions in the UK, we're going to do an auction.
Open to the public.
That is open to the public, yeah. So you know, the expensive, you know, high ticket item thing is the activities that I described earlier.
Right.
But sort of from around about 3:30 PM onwards, when the go-kart race starts, you know, people can just show up, and we really, really want to try and get as many people as we can to the auction.
What's the story with admission? How do you get admission into the Laguna Seca at 3:30?
You know, I don't know is the honest answer, okay. But, you know, show up, and okay. It will be down in the Turn 4 area, which is, you know, when you come on into Laguna and you drop down to where the track is, you drop down right to where Turn 4 is once you get around the little access road.
Right.
So, you know, I would just encourage people, if they want to come along for the auction, just to be there, you know, in time for 4 o'clock, because that's probably right about when the auction's going to start. And it should be a fun atmosphere. And we've got a lot of, you know, autographed gear, and we've got VIP tickets for Laguna Weekend that we're going to be giving away. Well, not giving away, auctioning off. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a ton of really good stuff to get your hands on, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity to mingle with some of the riders and some of the folks from Riders for Health too.
Sweet. All right. Well, thanks, Adam. I guess we'll see you at Day of the Stars.
Indeed.
And we'll see you.
You'll see us at MDK. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Jules.
Ciao.
I'm Jules Cheesick, and with me is Jim Race. We are filling in for Bob Hayes. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I don't know how we can ever fill in for the incredible Bob Hayes.
Well, we need a couple of beers, I think.
Well, you know, I just so happen to have a fresh one right here, so I'll do what I can.
There you go. So we had some racing last weekend. We got some racing coming up, so lots to talk about. Well, let's talk about last weekend first.
Sure. Not sure how much you've had a chance to do, but and watch. But I've kept a real good eye on it this weekend in Misano. Kind of a fantastic track and a really bizarre kind of sort of weather circumstances that hit the place.
Yeah. And I got to see all three races this time. Well, I mean, there's more than three races, but those are the three races that we watch, I guess. The Superbikes and Super Sport.
Yeah, I unfortunately have not chased down the Superstock stuff yet. I should probably do that because I know that at least in Superstock 1000, there's some pretty cool stuff going on.
And there was an incident, I guess, in one of those races that caused everything to get delayed, right?
Absolutely. The Superstock 1000 race, which was the first one up on Sunday, they took off in variable conditions, but there was a guy that stalled on the grid and was hit from behind. Pretty gruesome looking accident is my understanding, but both guys are relatively okay. And then there was a big pile up. And this is all just from reading and following up on things later on in that same lap. They red flagged it and ended up with a bunch of cleanup and pushed the whole schedule out, which was tough because at least for Eurosport, they had, you know, a day packed full of stuff. They didn't do any of the interviews in any of the races because they were switching back and forth. And for us junkies that, you know, occasionally stumble across those races on another network outside of the States, it was kind of frustrating, but I can totally understand. It's the bane of broadcasting live racing. You never know what your schedule is going to end up being.
Yep.
We had
a big surprise in qualifying for in Super Bowl for World Superbikes.
We totally did.
Go ahead.
We did, but we've never been surprised. Okay, so off the bat, what Jules is talking about is Jakob Smerts with Guadagnini, the team that's run by Pierre Francesco.
Well, actually, the bigger surprise was that Ben Spies was not on pole.
Well, okay, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
His streak has finally ended, which is it was amazing. I mean, 8 rounds, Super Bowl, new record. I doubt it's going to be beaten any, you know, unless by him, you know.
Yeah. No time soon, and you know, unless somebody else comes along. Well, not only that, but done by a series rookie. I mean, that's just outstanding.
It's incredible. I mean, it's been 18 years since the previous record, right?
Yep.
Incredible.
Doug Pollard's got some pretty gray hair these days.
Yes. Yep.
But yeah, it was, well, and you're right. That was the big, you know, not a surprise per se, because you knew that eventually, what was going to happen was that he couldn't consecutively get pole. Something was going to happen.
Sure.
But in this particular case, and part of it was due to the second qualifying being basically sort of rained out.
Right.
And so they reverted to the first qualifying times, and they did a similar thing in Supersport. But that popped Jakob Smerts to the top, which isn't surprising because he's kind of known as a one-hit wonder.
Right. Super Bowl is perfect for that kind of thing.
Yeah, but then he surprised us later, which we'll talk about.
Right.
That was great.
Yeah.
You want to walk through the order here?
On qualifying?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Let me tell you the people that went that did not make Super Pole. Just real briefly, Salome Legrève, Skasa, and Legrève had moved up from Super Sport this weekend, which was pretty cool. Skasa.
I was wondering who that was. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Skasa. I'll mangle this. Bioka. yeah, I hate that. Sorry. David Checa. Carlos' brother on the GMT 94 bike. John Hopkins, who was still recovering, and as it turned out, even though he did run in both qualifying practices and free practices, did not run the race.
Yep.
Iñuzo, Polita, and Resch. The first Super Pole got knocked out was Olivia Chaus, Parks, and Hacking, and Chaus was a big surprise because we thought that he'd I think he snuck in on the last lap, frankly. and Jamie Hacking, not so surprising. Mm. And in the second Super Pole, we lost Biaggi, Haslam, Nieto, Nakano, Kageyama, Sykes, Courser, and Lanzi. And
very surprising about Biaggi losing out that one, because he was very strong here last year.
It was, and I believe he, unlike a lot of his previous Super Bowl attempts, left a qualifier on the table. And he usually jumps on those pretty quick. So,
right.
And then we got quite the surprise because Smertz threw his fast lap down in Super Bowl III pretty early. But Spies didn't get second either. We had Johnny Ray in second, Vince Spies in third. Michel Fabrizio, who's, you know, I don't know what he's on this last part, second half of the season, but he better chicken it. And then totally cool with Shaky Byrne. It was nice to see him up there again. And he as well was a great performer in the races. Yep. Haga got in there as well. Carlos Checa with a solid run. And Rinichi Kinonari, who also snuck into the final one, the final Super Pole, right at the end of Super Pole 2, ended up in eighth position. So we had a great grid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was fun. I mean, it was one of those really fun Super Bowls to watch. Frankly, the Super Bowl 3 was kind of I'm not sure if you got a chance to watch it, but the rest of it was really interesting. And everybody's kind of figuring it out. I don't know if you've noticed that yet, but people are kind of figuring out the strategies.
I think they should get rid of the qualifying tire. I think it would make the Super Bowl format really a lot more interesting than it is right now.
Either that, or you could probably kick it up a notch by giving them enough to use at least one in each Super Bowl.
True, of course. But I think that, you know, for me, the whole qualifying tire doesn't make all that much sense, because what you're really doing is you're trying to show that you are able to run a race pace that will not, you know, screw up other people. I mean, that's the whole point of qualifying. And it became a separate event, you know, maybe two or three decades ago, and they started making, well, actually, they only started making qualifying, like specialized qualifying tires only about, like, you know, 15, 16 years ago, right? Because they didn't do that before. Maybe 20, 25, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it was actually fairly easy to make a qualifying tire for a long time. It was much harder to make a tire that would last for, you know, an entire race.
Well, of course, but I think that the very idea that you were making a tire specifically for this qualifying session, I really am a firm believer that especially the way they run Superbike qualifying these days, that we should just not have qualifiers. We should just let them show their race pace, because some guys are good on those qualifiers and they suck in the race and they screw somebody up, you know?
That's true. And we could have pointed directly to the guy that led this one.
Yeah.
and thought the same thing. I totally get your point. Part of me likes to see them go completely balls out on the best tire they can, but at the same time, it really kills the teams, because the bikes are totally differently set up for running on that qualifying tire.
There's so much extra work they have to do, and then you get, you know, the kind of the spectacle is also kind of lost when there's strategy involved and some guy, like, you know, if I was running these things, I'd probably use up my qualifiers in the first two sessions, because I just want to make sure I'm in the top eight, you know?
True. I actually learned this at Miller, and I didn't know this before. Most of the guys, or at least the guys, you know, they're going to make it to the end, have separate qualifying mapping for their TC and all that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, you got that extra, and everybody, you know, it was like the first time I rode on slicks, I'm like, holy cow. Instead of DOT tires. But it was cool. And Friday, frankly, was a beautiful day. And they got some pretty good times in, and they got very close to the record. But Saturday was a very mixed bag. And, you know, the times were okay, but they were about 2 seconds, not 2 seconds off. They were about maybe half a second off or something like that.
Yep.
But then we woke up to Sunday, and things were a lot different.
Yeah.
Or we didn't, you know, we woke up on Sunday and the race was already over, but yeah, it's kind of a real drag in that Americans complaining about European series again, but I'm complaining because I can't see it live all the time and I'm not willing to get up at some ungodly hour.
Well, but even if you could, you wouldn't be able to see it.
That's very true. And,
because there is actually no way to watch the World Superbikes live in the U.S., Except when it's a Miller, you know, or like,
Or you use extremely nefarious and dodgy means. But, but this is a word to Infront Sports people. If you're listening, I'd be more than happy to pay a decent price to watch this live. So if you're renegotiating your contract with your U.S. broadcaster, I know there's a lot of people over here in the States that would love to watch this stuff live. I'm serious. All right, so on to the races.
Race one was a weird one.
Yeah, it was. Well, it rained all morning. You know, we talked about Superstock 1000 and the problems they had, and that ended up with a delay, which pushed the Superstock 1000 race to between the Super Sport and Race 2.
Yeah.
Schedule's already screwed up, and they started on a – it was declared our first – I think it's our first flag-to-flag – just like MotoGP World Superbike race.
Yep.
And so we had the entire pit dealy bob, and it started off with a very, very damp track.
What was amazing was just how long some of the riders actually stayed out. I think...
yeah, it was.
Shaky Burns stayed out till like, you know, 20 minutes from the end, or not even that, like 10 minutes from the end?
I believe there were about 8 laps left.
Yeah.
And the final person to come in. Well, let's back up a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
In the wet, Byrne took off like, you know, a madman. And
that's right. It was amazing. He was like 9 seconds ahead of the field. Like,
at one point, he had an 17 or 18 second lead. you had a bunch of guys that came in and pitted really early. You had a few crashes. Let me back up even further on the warm-up lap.
That's right.
Courser high-sided and was not able to restart the race. He did run a race too, but he looked like he landed on his right shoulder again, which is never good. The guy, you know, but he did start and did okay.
Mm-hmm.
Forget his exact result race too. We'll talk about that in a bit, but. Byrne off like a fox, and frankly, this was if you look at it, the classic flag to flag. It was kind of like two races because it started off nice and wet, and it was still a little bit overcast. But as soon as that blew off and the wind picked up, you had a lot of guys coming in, and the pits got furious.
Yep.
And so first guy in, if I recall correctly, was Nakano, and that was pretty early. It was probably like lap 8 or 9. And the first thing that I hearken back to was Le Mans, MotoGP, because, you know, we had guys coming in early and guys going down early.
Right.
And the announcers made the same, made a little bit of the same comparison, and I agree with them on that. But as it turned out, anybody that did go out on the 6 really didn't end up with too many problems. Seemed like it worked out, but the guys that stayed out there the longest were Byrne and, in the end, Hacking, who did pay for it because he was running pretty high. But Spies came in probably in the middle of the pack, and he was a little bit down.
Yep.
And once the track started drying, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Not even being an American Spies fanboy, man, he started just cutting people up, making passes left and right. And I was shocked. And I'm just very, very impressed. So, our finishing order, I'm sure there's more that we could talk about in that race.
Well, there is one thing that I still have not gotten a clear, answer to, which was what the heck happened to Jonathan Rea at the beginning of that race. Cause he was not on the grid. He started from the pit lane.
Then he had
a jump. No, he didn't have a jump stop, but he had a right through penalty, I guess
Okay, I'll fill you in.
Yeah, please.
He was supposed to start in second. For whatever reason, and I don't know why yet, the last thing that I've heard is he started from position 9 on the grid, which is why we didn't see him in the second spot. Uh-huh. They didn't put that out on the broadcast that I saw. If he did start in pit lane, either way with the wet track, and him being an Englishman used to being of the British Isles and used to riding in the rain, he would have been right up there at the front anyway. Right. And so he had a, you know, a great first part. All of the guys that were used to riding in the rain had a really great first part of the race until it started drying out. And so some of them still did really well in the end, and of course, to give you the results in a moment. But his ride through, or his penalty, I think, was because he I may be misstating this, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be mixing it up with something else.
I don't know
else.
What happened at all. It was just bizarre.
Yeah. I believe he was penalized because...
Go ahead, just say it. It's okay.
I think he stopped and picked up Chiannari and gave him a ride back. But I'm not sure if that was for... I don't know. You know, you're right. And I don't know why he... Because he had his ride through during the race, and I cannot remember. So if
it was right at the very beginning.
Yeah, if one of you MotoGPOD listeners could remind us of what that was, and even fill in parts of the other gaps of our sometime lapsing memory, please feel free to do so.
Yeah, because I mean, he actually finished what, seventh? Yeah, he finished seventh.
Finished seventh. So
he overcame a lot of crap at the start of the race and still finished really well.
Yeah, he did. And a big part of that is because he did his ride through when it was still wet.
Right.
So that's why I say it was basically like two races. So our finishing order, and we'll walk through at least about half of it here.
Yeah.
Ben Spies did win by a decent margin, about 8 seconds. And Shaky Byrne not only had a great wet ride, but because of his staying out there on those wets for so long, man, those tires were shagged. You could see chunks falling
off. I know. It was crazy that he really pushed. I think he was, I guess, hoping that that he wouldn't have to go in. You know?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, there were no more puddles or anything on the track, and there was no way that those tires were going to get anything close to better. So he was 8 seconds back. Behind him, Fabrizio, who is obviously coming on strong this season. And a surprise to everybody, most of us, was Jakob Smirts in fourth spot. So,
right.
And part of me thinks that people
And he almost got Fabrizio, actually. I mean, he came very close to getting him again.
It was very strong. And part of me thinks that because of all the talk of him being a one-lap wonder, part of him said, you know what, I'm going to prove I'm not.
I'm going to be a 23 and a half lap wonder. You know?
Exactly. Haga managed to not lose too much out to Spies in race one and came in fifth. Kageyama in sixth. Johnny Ray in seventh, as you mentioned. Tom Sykes, another person used to riding the rain. Shinya Nakano, who was the first to pit for the slicks. Matthew LaGrieve, great. First step up, and he's in 10th, top 10. That kicks butt, man. That's great.
That is very cool.
Carlos Checa, Leon Haslam, Max Biaggi, Ruben Chaus, who was actually leading the race at one point.
Yes.
That was awesome.
He got some camera
cool.
time,
first
you know?
Yeah, he did. And he was one of the guys to stay out pretty late on the wets as well.
He was one of the last guys in. Yep.
Polita Hacking, who was the last guy to pit and get new tires. Nieto, Lanzi, you know, so David Checa, Gregorio Livia, and David Salom. So
Zelz, I think, pitted like 5 times, didn't he? He just kept going back into the pits.
I think he did. Oh, and I should also mention, both Ray and Checa in that race, when they swapped bikes, both had their bikes stall. Ray's for maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds, no, maybe 30 seconds. Checa's for much longer, maybe almost, well, at least to him and me, it probably seemed like 2 minutes, but he was pissed. He was mad. And, you know, no matter what language he was cussing, he was kind of saying, So that was a great race. You know, bode well for things to come. And at that point, the track was, all, you know, pretty much straight up dry. And from there, we moved on to Super Sport, which we hopefully we'll touch on briefly because that was a great race, too.
This is sick.
Well, it's man, I'm telling you.
It's heating up, man. It's really amazing.
It is. And not only that, but the cool thing is those guys, and who I'm talking about is Eugene Laverty and Cal Crutchlow, are, you know, friendly off track.
just well, off track.
They're friends, but they're very respectful of each other. You want to go through the Super Sport race real quick?
Let's do that, yeah.
Okay, because that was fun. It was a good one. That was a bit of a surprise, too, because Saturday's results for qualifying were basically tossed out the window. And we ended up with some local guys on the front row, which surprised everybody, and some of the usual folks being farther back in the pack. I'll just run through the top 10 so you get an idea, or top 15 so you get an idea who's qualified where. On top was Michel Pirro, and I believe he's close. Cal Crutchlow had second. Riccoli, who is very local, that's his hometown, Rimini. Fujiwara made up your front row. Next row was Nannelli, West, Etchison, and Laverty. So Eugene was back there on row two. And in the back row, too. Then we had Pitt, Lescure, Safuaglu, and Delomo. And then various and sundry other folks, including Michael Laverty on the new CRS Honda bike back in 23rd. And he has, by the way, nailed a deal to ride that bike all this season. So he's going to finish up his AMA races. None of them conflict. And he's also going to be racing the rest of the year with Eugene in Supersport. So.
That's amazing. He's going to do a lot of flying.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that... Brains and company are building the motors for that bike, so they've got the power. They just need to get that thing sorted so and Michael certainly has the capability. It'd be great to see him up front. So that was your qualifying grid. Let me see if I managed to save this here somewhere. I probably didn't. Let me find the results. Well, we can talk about that a bit.
Well, the main part of the results, I think, was, well, first of all, it was a two part race because we had a red flag.
We had a red flag for Kenan Safuaglu, who crashed in the second corner, and in doing so,
I think it took out like he
oiled
lost
the track.
Oil. Yeah, he lost oil. That's right.
And the pole sitter, Pirro, crashed out immediately afterwards. And the other thing we didn't mention is I believe it was lap two, another Tenkata rider, Andrew Pitt, was leading the race and crashed without serious injury, maybe perhaps walking wounded, in one of the fastest corners of the track, right after Eugene had got back up right behind him. So Pitt and Laverty were up to the front by the second lap. And frankly, laps two and three from all of the fast guys were just incredible because they were just ripping through to the front of the grid. That was fun. I've watched that two or three times now because that was amazing riding. So both Tenkata bikes were out by the end of the red flag. And we had a decently long red flag, which, again, screwed up the schedule even more and probably put some serious heartaches headaches into the broadcasters. Yeah, go ahead.
But after the red flag, the results were incredibly close. I mean, Laverty and Crutchlow were like, you know, a couple hundreds apart, I think. And
well, yeah, because we ran on aggregate time, I appreciate why they do that. Sometimes it's really frustrating to watch them, primarily because the announcers tend to just sit there and remind you again over and over, and I'd rather kind of get it in my head and figure it out, and you know, that's fine, but it does kind of throw off any thoughts of trying to watch the people behind, you know, the people in the first pack, because that's all the camera's on. You really have no idea what's going on further back,
right?
But it's probably the most fair way of
yeah
yeah But it does kind of spoil the scene. But yeah, so when they threw the red flag, Eugene had a very slight lead over Cal. It was I think they said it was 0.08, which is nothing, a blink of an eye.
Yep.
And it took a 4 or 5 laps, and probably the biggest bother was Lescors up at the front. And he actually was 5 seconds back, so he was kind of a spoiler in a way. But once those two got clear, it was dogfight. It was some great riding. Some very, very you could see Laverty use his classic 250 style that has actually served him really well in super sport sometimes, because he can take crazy alternate lines, yet still keep up the corner speed. And tribute to the Pro Calgar guys for keeping that bike going that way. But a dogfight to the end, and all Eugene had to do was basically be, a little bit behind him. But in the final corner, he spun up the rear and nearly crashed after I watched that back. But he ended up being about maybe 0.5 second back. And so Cal took the win, Eugene second in Rockley, which was awesome. The local Rimini kid, was third on the podium. So that was cool.
Yeah. But so far behind, I mean, those two guys really are running away with the championship in every single way.
Absolutely.
And Laverty. It's just, yeah. It's their show.
It is. And, the 10 Cota guys, they had to finish this race, and both of them out. That's
yep.
That's it. The points right now are widely separated, unless something else happens, detrimental to them. But, and the cool thing is they're, we're going from Misano where, it's the Italians' local spot, and they have a great weekend, straight over to Donington, where both series, World Superbike and World Supersport, are just stocked to the gills with Brits,
right?
And Islanders, and it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun. I'm really looking forward to this weekend. It's gonna be busy.
yeah. And now let's talk about race two, because there's gonna be a very happy Brit going over to his home territory,
absolutely. So race two started off in the dry, and it was a
and stayed cool there in the dry. Thankfully,
yeah, it started in the dry and stayed in the dry, that was a great race at the front. There weren't a whole lot of changes, but there were some people up there that sort of made a mark for themselves, one of them being Shaky Byrne, who stuck it out near the front for a while, and it was a very close race at the end. Finishing between the gap between the top three was less than 0.5 seconds, so that was fantastic, and it was nice to see that. And
just the racing there was incredible. The it actually looked to me like I was positive Jonathan Rea, who ended up winning the race, let's just go right there, that he was holding back both the Ducatis. But then, they'd pass him, and it's not like they were making mistakes. He was just, he was just finding more. He's really got that bike figured out as far as, coming out of a corner and getting on the gas and just the drive. His drive is just incredible, because nobody's doing that on the Hondas. He's the only one who's really doing it.
Yeah, he's got it. It practically looks like he's switching to a 1198 engine.
Yeah, exactly. You figured the way that this race was running that the Ducatis would completely own the field, because they did. If it wasn't for him, we like Ducati. Stick a couple of Hondas in there and another Ducati. So that was amazing. And Jonathan Rea was unbelievable. Fabrizio was unbelievable. Haka, I thought, ran a really good race, and but he's playing a very conservative game, which is so strange to see.
Yeah,
there were a couple times where he definitely stuffed it in there, especially against Fabrizio.
Let's back up and explain possibly why he would have done that.
Well, because he wants to win the championship.
I understand that, but it was a strategy for this single race.
Oh, because of speeds, right.
Yeah, I jumped ahead, and you followed along right along. Speed started off the race, and in the first or second lap, he realized that his clutch was spinning up, and he threw his hand up and just started backing up. He went from, I think, 5th to 17th in one lap.
Right.
And most everybody that was watching was like, whoops, you know, or a classic, another
Yamaha failure.
Yeah, another Yamaha mechanical failure. And then all of a sudden, no, he's not off, and he's drifting back there.
I believe that most of the announcers thought that he had pitted.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because I mean, he was gone. He was not on the camera,
mm-hmm.
and he was on their timing screens. He was like, you know, 17th. All of a sudden, after one lap from 5th to 17th, and then you know, then he started fighting his way back. So it really felt like he had gone off and maybe changed bikes or whatever.
In a way, he sort of did pit, because what he did, and I think he said that it was over the space of two laps, was he just sat there and adjusted. As if you ride a motorcycle, you know that there's usually an adjustment you can make with a star or a wheel on your clutch lever, or in the case of a hydraulic clutch, other adjustments that you can make. And yeah, obviously they're not using cable clutches. And so he just sat there and adjusted to it until he could find a spot where he could actually ride. And he did find a spot, and he was able to get the thing to actually grip, and grip also as far as slipping, slipper clutch going into the corners, and got the fire back under him. It wasn't perfect, clearly, by the end results, but frankly, going from 17th to the position he finished in the top 10 was not a bad result.
No.
And
he actually ended up, you know, gaining a couple points of Haga by the end of the weekend.
He did.
5 points, maybe, I think?
No, actually, I think, I think it was 5 points. I think it was 5 points.
Yeah.
And so, you know, frankly, right now, anything is good. He's currently, but the downside of that is that Fabrizio gained on speeds. So he's only 7 behind right now.
Right.
And if he continues the streak that he's got going, let me run down at least the top 10 finishers here, maybe go a little bit further. Okay. Yeah, Johnny Ray, Michel Fabrizio, Noriyuki Haga.
It should be noted that Fabrizio and Ray were, what, 6/100ths apart.
Yes, they were. And they had I did not have any doubt from probably about lap 22 that Ray was going to win.
Anyway.
I could see that he had something in reserve, or at least that's what I saw for about the last two laps. And I saw that he was winding himself up to have, you know, that ending part in it. I think part of what it is that we grow so used to seeing Fabrizio ride like he's on the edge that we don't, that when we actually see him on the edge, it doesn't seem unusual. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And so what he always looks like when he's near the front, he always looks like he's riding at 10 tenths. So when he's riding 11 tenths, it still looks like 10 tenths, and we can't tell.
Good point.
But Ray looked composed through that entire probably last 6 or 7 laps. And when somebody looks like that, that usually means they have something in their pocket. So
we did some great, great back and forth stuff at the end.
Yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, just you know, the heart. You know, kind of like the super sport race. You know, yeah. two guys just kicking butt at the front.
Forget Haga was definitely in there. I really thought he was going to actually take off and get the win, but those guys were just so determined. You know. It was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What are you riding again? You're like, oh, that's not very nice. Yeah. No, I really enjoyed that race. And I think I liked it. It was a very obviously a much cleaner race than race one, and just a blast to watch. And again, those races, you know, World Superbike's been great this year, and I implore Yamaha Italia to figure out what's going on with Ben's bikes. And you know, it's a new bike, sure, but it's not that new. And you know, part of it is that, you know, maybe if he'd been able to take his whole team over there, But all he could take over, and who knows whatever the reason was. And I say all, but it's a lot, was Houseworth.
The engine is new. The actual crank and stuff is new, but the parts that are breaking have nothing to do with that.
You're right. They're,
we've had transmission issues, shifter issues. We've got
fuel.
Yeah. Fuel could be a very related to the new motor, but still.
You're right. They're known quantities. They're commodities. They're not they're not rocket science. So. Part of it too. If you can back up a little bit and you go, well, nobody's ever seen the kind of forces that, or a Yamaha R1 has never seen the kind of forces that Spies, who is a great rider, has put into those parts. So he's kind of like a beta tester for all of the parts because he knows how to break them the best. Who knows?
He needs that illegal crank from the Suzuki last year.
Yeah, maybe that's never know. Never mind.
All right. So Haga was third, and then
next three were Smertz, Chuck, and Byrne, and Shakey's back up there again. So, top two, finish of second and sixth, fantastic for him because he's had a bit of a rough season going so far.
He was looking so great in the preseason that it's about time. Absolutely. We've been waiting for this.
Great for Stellaragada because they've had a lot of issues this year. They started out as a two rider team with Polita, I believe it's Polita, and went down to one. And then some of the Monster money looked like it had moved a bit over, or not Monster, I'm sorry, the Guadagnini money moved along with Biaggi, and so looks like they're getting it going. Tom Sykes was in seventh, Leon Haslam. In ninth, Ben Spies, and in tenth, Max Biaggi.
Yeah, so Ben Spies came back from 17th, and again cut through the field pretty much like the first race, except he just didn't have enough to make it. He didn't have enough time left.
Absolutely.
I mean, he had one of the fastest laps. No, he didn't have Haga put in the fastest lap during the race.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was fun. I had a great time. Actually I think I'll probably watch race two again. So
cool.
Well,
let's talk about Assen. Assen's coming up. It's one of my favorite rounds. And we also have, Dunnington, and obviously we're going to have the races are staggered. So it's going to be just a perfect weekend.
Absolutely.
Remember Saturday. Is Assen,
right? And we've got just to mention real quickly is it looks like we may have weather issues with both.
Right. Well, I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, both those places do tend to get iffy weather, so that's surprising. Let's just hope that we'll see a Assen race in MotoGP the way we've seen the last couple years of World Superbikes and Super Sports over there.
Yeah, exactly.
They have really been incredible races there. Stoner does really well at Assen. Ducati does really well at Assen. So he's kind of a favorite, I guess you could say. But I think that we just witnessed the beginning of a new rivalry in Catalonia. So, and Fiat Yamaha is just so freaking on top of, they really are on top of the pile in terms of the bikes. So it's going to be a good race, really good race. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool that, when Stoner can come up with a third of the last race when he's, basically barfing in his helmet, right. Clearly he's going to, a healthy Casey is going to be a force to be reckoned with, especially after winning last year. So, I'm looking forward to it. And you're exactly right. I mean, the rivalry has bloomed at Fiat Yamaha, and frankly, after the last race, it's not that they were unfriendly. It was, and there's a great picture at MotoGP.com. Hopefully they'll have it up, of Valentino, with a big smile on his face at the press conference from today, I believe, with a big smile on his face. And on one side of him, he's got Jorge. On the other side, he's got Casey. And both of them look like all they want to do is get away from him. They've just got the worst looks on their face. So I think it's going to be a great weekend. And, you know, we've had some great races from Assen in MotoGP. And you know, frankly, Assen often comes out with surprises, too. So,
no, yeah, but the thing that I think is very interesting is that after Catalunya, you know, Dovizioso was on top on the test, and the Honda seems to be coming along. So they could be throwing a wrench in there as well. Like, let's not count out the fact that we've got two really talented riders riding Repsol Hondas, and those bikes are seemingly getting there finally.
But this week, that I don't know why this was even said, but Pedrosa said that he's going to race without painkillers. I don't know if that means he's healed or he's going to try and have more sensation in his leg. And the fact that he might still need them kind of points towards still some issues. So,
I think that kid is going to be in pain all year. You know.
Yeah. True. And on top of that, you may have some morale issues with Grassini, since today it was announced that Simoncelli is definitely going to Grassini. So
right, that's right.
You know, the first, I thought about that today. I'm like, you know, who's for sure going to leave? First, I was like, De Angelis, and I'm like, well, you know, if Honda's driving this boat, you know, they're going to want Tony to leave because he's not performing on the Bridgestones, and I've got no idea. That they may both be going. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't see any reason to keep either one of them, because there's plenty of Spanish and Italian riders. I mean, of course, De Angelis is not, you know, officially Italian, but it's pretty close.
True. So
they don't, you know, because riders like Tozan and even Takahashi, who may lose his seat to Tomasi,
yeah.
They're going to get a big boost just from their nationality. I mean, it's just part of the sport, you know, that we want to have as many different nationalities represented, especially ones where, you know, I mean, Japanese. Can you imagine having MotoGP without a Japanese rider in it?
It would be strange.
Very strange. Lots of all these Japanese factories and no Japanese riders.
Would only be strange because of tradition. And frankly, I don't know enough about the Japanese Superbike Championship to know if there is
somebody coming up.
Somebody on the horizon.
Well, there's a bunch of kids over in the Rookies Cup, and also, you know, you got Hero. So,
oh, true, that's right. And but at the same, okay, so in the same vein, and you mentioned that, I think what we're going to see next year, without totally going into silly season conversation, is a lot of these riders that may or may not lose their seats in MotoGP. There's going to be a bad scramble as well for World Superbike, and I think a lot of those seats are filled. I think we may see some serious talent in Moto2.
Yes, definitely.
And so I think it actually provides an escape route for an escape route / stepping point for a lot of people. I mean, I frankly, as much as I railed last year about losing the 250 two-strokes, with the amount of teams that are going in, I think if they can get the rules right and some parity in that class, you're going to see some really damn good racing.
Yeah, no, you know, it's the same thing as with the tire rules, right? Like
we
kind of rue the fact that we don't have a tire war anymore. But now that it's over, I mean, there's nothing we can do about it.
Right.
You know, right. The racing is good, so maybe it worked out for the best. I mean, I'm super excited about Moto2. I'm super upset about the demise of the 250s, but I'm getting over it because I'm getting excited about the number of entries. I'm getting excited about the kind of people that are entering. You know, it's going to be very cool.
And you're right. We've got no choice. But normally I probably wouldn't warm up that fast. And it just an aside is, I don't know if the spec tire rule has actually made racing any better, but I don't think it's hurt it, which I think some of us thought that might happen. Yeah, you know, maybe later on, even when Bob gets back, you can drag me back, because I'm going to try and really focus on, you know, I'm kind of the world superbike guy, and maybe like might really dig into Moto 2. So we'll see how that goes. We'll let you guys handle the elite stuff. And then what do we talk about? We talk about Donington, which by the way, they switched it this year. I think last year it was in I want to say September or something. It was later in the year. And so I think, you know, they'd originally switched it to possibly get to some dry weather, and it didn't quite work out. Well, let me mention this on both of the races. The weather reports as I see them right now, and by the time this is released, we'll already know if these predictions were true. But tomorrow and Friday for Assen are supposed to be nice, and Saturday has got some varying chance of rain. For Donington, you've got Thursday and Friday that's supposed to be nice, and then I'm sorry, you got Friday and Saturday that's supposed to be nice, and then Sunday when rain looks like it's coming. So, but you know, everybody's got a good, at least for Donington, that place is well known in the rain for just about everybody in the series in World Superbike, so, and Super Sport, frankly.
Electric Series?
Oh, yeah, the Electric Series.
Yeah.
FAM today, or this was kind of your bit, so we run with it.
Well, they announced that there's going to be an actual series in 2010 for zero emission bikes. It's not actually clear if it's going to be electric only, or the way they did the rules for the TTXGP was that it was basically a zero emissions race. Now, obviously, the only technology we have right now that would really do that is electric. So I imagine it's going to be an electric series. But it's very cool. I don't know exactly, you know, how many rounds there are going to be. There's very few details. But FIM is obviously very aware of the fact that these machines are going to be coming to the market in the next few years. And it's time to get them racing, you know?
Yeah, I kind of felt bad last week because I think I slagged a little bit on the TTXGP bikes, but I do applaud them for, you know, it would have been really easy to say, well, oh, you know, let's try it in a couple of years when the technology comes up to speed. But frankly, nothing makes technology come up to speed like racing.
Exactly.
And so by doing it now, you know, if they figure out how to present it properly and in the right context, they're gonna force it to be better, because if it ain't, people ain't going to watch it and they're not going to like it. So now the burden is on the teams and technologists to make this stuff work. And you know, they've got a show to put on under the FIM's mandate. So get cracking.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be good stuff.
Right on.
Okay. That's it. So we'll do one more. So next week's show will be early because I'm taking off for Laguna on Wednesday with Bob. Bob and I are going to be attending the Day of the Stars, which is another thing that we'll mention that next week. A little more details on that stuff.
Right on. Thanks, Jules.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jim. Have a good night. Ciao.
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 Bye.
Bye. Okay, good evening. I'm talking to Michael Lentz, dad of Peter Lentz, who we've talked to back in early May. And unfortunately, Peter had a mishap at PIR Raceway. It was his first time out at PIR, right, Michael?
Yeah, he had been to Portland International as a pocket bike rider in the paddock. It was his first time actually racing the big track.
And this is on May 31st. Peter had a crash during his first race there, and now he's recovering well. And I wanted to check up with you and check in, and we'll see what's going on.
Yep. So it was Sunday. He'd turned 12 the previous day, so it was he's 12 years old in one day, and basically went out on a warm up lap. Had no brakes. And a stuck throttle, lots of traffic on the track, and proceeded to run off the track and hit a tire wall. He was transported to Legacy Emanuel and was in ICU and pediatric unit for a couple weeks and came home. And at this point, he is back to his old self as far as being Peter and personality and all that stuff. And he's progressing phenomenally. You know, it's like the doctors are like, "Oh, you'll walk on Friday," and you know, here it is Monday, and you know, he's walking around. You know, he's doing phenomenal.
You know, thanks very much for actually for you guys updating your Facebook page, because that's been really, like, you know, after the accident, you know, everything kind of sounded kind of scary, and it was really good to see that how quickly everything started to, you know, all those operations and everything came out really great, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's
considering all the damage.
You know, yeah, considering everything that happened and, you know, severity and the fact that basically shattered his left side of the body and everything, and we're very fortunate to be at Legacy, where they have a phenomenal trauma unit, well recognized pediatric unit, and you know, orthopedic surgeons that are pretty well recognized as well. So all in all, it was and on top of that, it was, you know, 20 miles from our house, which is significantly closer than the, you know, 30 hours that we normally are. So
right,
all
right.
told, it was really good.
And the people at PIR were good too.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was phenomenal. They were on the scene within, you know, probably 20 seconds, and then after that, you know, they red flagged the warm up lap, because obviously they hadn't started racing, so they didn't have to wait to get the boxes moving or anything. So all told, Omer did a phenomenal job. The corner workers did a great job. You know, they're all trained. You know, the paramedics are all trained by Omer to actually handle motorcycle racers, as far as taking off their equipment, how to handle helmets, you know, look for head trauma, internal bleeding without necessarily taking suits off, all that stuff. So, honestly, in the grand scheme of things, everything that happened, the rest of it, we couldn't ask for more. And then, as you mentioned, you know, Peter is actually talking about today, and it's like, you know, when he has a bad day or in the hospital, the rest of it was the cards. It was, you know, the Facebook messages, it was the voicemails, it was text messages that really kept him going and kept his spirits up. And then, you know, the people, you know, just stopping by, total strangers, and met quite a few nice people that just were in the area, driving through town or whatever, had heard about stuff, stopped by the hospital. It's incredible. It really has been.
Yeah, I mean, last time we talked, we talked about the whole community, how much of Peter's career is kind of thanks to the community, and it continues through, even through, you know, like these kinds of times. I know that the Facebook page, I think, like, quadrupled in the number of fans. It was amazing.
Actually, I think it was by a factor of 10.
Nice.
I think it's what it ended up being.
Nice.
Yeah, and you know, incredible thing, you know, around the social networking and the rest of it, was the fact that, you know, we were able to, you know, keep people up to date without necessarily having to make phone calls or, you know,
exactly,
take phone calls during the whole thing, which has, you know, been really nice as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, all the operations, him going in, him coming out, everything's good. You know,
yep.
Everybody's clicking the little like button on Facebook. And,
yeah. Yeah, and it's literally, we, you know, when Peter's, you know, come in or out of surgery or the rest of it, you know, just to get well, and hey, look, you know, 7 people commented on this, here are the comments, or, you know, the get well messages through his website or the rest of it. It's, like I said, it's just been great. And then, you know, occasionally little packages show up, you know, completely unmarked. It's like someone sent a care package, never signed it, right? Just said,
wow,
you know, get well, Peter, and, you know, we're looking out for you, and, you know, chin up. You know,
sweet.
And then, you know, it's like a friend of mine had worked at Dorna, and Dorna actually sent him a signed Nikki Hayden hat, right? That said, you know, to Peter, you know, from Nikki.
Cool.
So, I mean,
nice.
it's you know, the community is so small, and, you know, it's just been phenomenal. And Peter's doing so well. His, like I said, his spirits are really high. He's doing his PT. He's going to be at Laguna Seca, and his goal is not to have a wheelchair. So he's been walking up the stairs unaided. He's been doing his leg lifts, you know, stretching, you know, all that stuff, so he can, you know, get to the Laguna, walk around, and, you know, that'll be like 5 weeks post accident.
Wow, that's great. He's going to be all buff too, probably.
Yeah, as buff as a little kid his size can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been really great.
He is right now at home then, right? He's been at home for about a couple weeks now?
Yeah, it's been a little while. Like I said, he's in the hospital for, I think, 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. ICU for a couple days, and then he's in the pediatric unit because he had some leg complications and stuff. But he's, like I said, he's healing great. He's been home for a while, totally settled in. First couple nights, he'd call us on the phone. We put a phone in his room, and we were at the other end of the house, so he'd call us and things like that. But it's like the next night, he's like, my goal was not to call you. So, he went to bed, and 12 hours later, he came out or called us to help him out at that point. Now he's completely self-sufficient, gets up, everything else all by himself, and, plays Xbox and,
Kicks butt in COD4.
Yeah, COD4, a little bit of 5. My wife broke down and bought him Transformers that he'd been asking for quite a while and, stuff like that. But it doesn't seem to be slowing him down at all, even though, he's got the nerve damage in his hand for a couple more months. Still kicks my butt.
That's the left, because it was all left side damage, right?
Yeah.
All
left
pretty
side. Much every, yeah, it's, like I said, the tib-fib, lower leg, femur. Which, the tib fib's in an external fixator.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see a little kid with the weird contraption, it looks like the Death Star kind of thing on his lower leg, that's probably Peter. the femur they pinned, and the upper arm they plated. So he's that's pretty much it. And then the cut under his chin and stuff is, all stitched up, and the plastic surgeons took care of that, and looks a whole lot better than my chin when I split my chin open when I was a little kid.
I've got a little scar too.
So I think most of us do.
Yeah, back when toys were made out of metal.
Yeah.
And had sharp edges and no warnings.
Yep.
So good. So he's going to be at Laguna. We'll definitely have to meet up. I've actually never met him, so it'll be cool to see him. Did you guys get to watch Catalunya together?
I'm sorry, watch what?
MotoGP Catalunya, at Catalunya?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What do you think of that
everything
race?
That's been on the DirecTV has been, I think, covered at this point.
Nice.
So, he was pretty stoked on that race.
Yeah, it was the return of the real MotoGP that, we haven't seen for a while.
Yeah, there's screams in the house and the rest of it. And then we watched some of the, I'm not sure if folks are aware, but you can actually watch the rookie cup races at, the Red Bull rookie cup, .com. Right. So we downloaded it's all streamed, but we watched those on the laptop plugged it into the plasma and, watched that stuff. So that was pretty cool too.
Cool.
But Peter,
is he itching to get out there?
What's that?
Is he itching to get out on the bike?
Yeah. And as I was about to say, it's like, Peter has a definite goal.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got the fixator on for 4 months. That basically puts him into the October time frame. And there's a couple of superbike schools at Streets of Willow, which is one of, if not his favorite track, at the end of October. So he's looking to get ready for that and, make sure his body's ready. And, that's what he's looking towards for getting back on the bike. And at this point, we just need to figure out what he's going to ride. And, we got some help from a few folks to go through and just upgrade some of the parts that were getting old. And that looks like what he'll be getting on is just, new radiators and new engine and stuff like that that was causing some issues. So thank you for everyone for their help in that regard.
That's great. Okay, and then he gets his – he's basically obviously done with it for the season, and the next season starts in April of next year?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, this past year started in January with Wera at Cal Speedway. But one of the things that, as a family, and Peter and I talked about it, and my wife and I talked about it, is that, if we have any kind of inkling around reservation around a track, he's not going to ride it. So there's – there's some tracks that are used in some of the series that, we had been a little bit nervous about, and air fronts are not, there's, potential risk.
Yep.
And there's absolutely no reason for him to take that risk. So, there's going to be some series that, he's not going to, he's, potentially not going to run the whole thing depending on what tracks they pick.
So
he'll really be focused on, the training, the education around himself as a rider and how to communicate, things along those lines, and then doing spot races as appropriate. So, again, it's like if it works out that he's going to run the whole series, great. But, there's some tracks that some of the series run that there's absolutely no way I'd ride it, and there is no reason that Peter would either. So.
Yeah, well, like, we were talking before we started recording, he's only 12, so.
Yep. Yeah, just turned.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, everyone's like, what a great birthday present, So, it's definitely started out, and there's definitely some things that I see different in the way he's carrying himself, not just physically, but emotionally. He's still a little kid and the rest of it, but there's a determination in his step and in his eyes and the way he's talking that obviously you can't go through the type of trauma that he did and the experience he did and not come out, unchanged. So, he's still a little kid and having fun, but there's definitely that that part of him that's like, I really want to do this. And
it's really good that he actually has that kind of a goal. It'll give him like a it's a very measurable goal,
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. That's that kind of thing is good for kids in general. And most kids don't have goals as lofty as Peter. So.
Yeah, like you said, for a long time is, at least his first step is, get to Europe and race in the CV series and then get to MotoGP 125s and win that championship. That's what his goal is. And he hasn't wavered from that. And I think at this point there's, like I said, there's, believe it or not, more determination than there was before, which is
I do believe it.
Pretty crazy.
I do believe it. He sounds like the kind of kid that this is going to be like a challenge that he will take up. I mean, he already did.
Mm-hmm.
At this point.
And literally, it's like when you see his face in PT, and it's like, okay, the PT person's like, okay, this is far enough. And he's just like, no, it's not. And grits his teeth and goes further.
Wow.
And they're like, well, you don't have to do that. And he's like, yeah, he just does it. So anyway, that's Peter.
And you guys are doing okay? You and Jennifer?
Yeah. It's been an emotional roller coaster, obviously, but, like I said, the support, both, our family and friends and the community, and getting phone calls from folks and just saying, hey, if you need anything, let me know. Or just literally just, being on the other end of the phone and listening. And like I said, it's like people stopping by and, just, being there, or literally just taking Pete for, it's like, Eric Dorn, EDR Performance, stepped by with Gary, who works there too, one of the mechanics, and mm-hmm. just took Peter around the floor, and it's, they just cheered him up, and in doing so, it's like, you can just see like everyone's spirits lifted. And then, Quentin Wilson, stepped by as well and just, cheered Peter up phenomenally. And then, the voicemail from, Colin Edwards and Colin Sr. and Earl Hayden. And it was, it's pretty amazing. And I think just the fact that there is so much support and the rest of it has just made it so much easier, even though it's, I don't envy anybody that has to go through something like this ever.
Well, I think that a lot of the hardest hit people are the people who are like, are like you guys. Like, I have a friend who just went through like a pretty big medical scare, and it was his wife really that really was the one that was stressed out, not him, because
yeah.
she's the one who had to deal. I mean, she's the one who had to watch it. So, I'm a dad myself, so I know that this is very difficult for you. So, best of luck to Peter, obviously, on the recovery. But you guys got to take care of yourselves too. Make sure that you don't, you don't burn out and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the work, my work has been great too, where it's just like, take the time you need and the rest of it. But, I'm lucky to be married to one of the strongest women I know, both, and she happens to be my best friend too. So it's like through this whole ordeal, the whole thing, it's been, as far as the support structure and friends and family, it's been great. And, unfortunate that the event happened, but on the flip side of it, the positives are, just the fact that you see how many friends you do have, and on top of it, the strength of your marriage. And honestly, it's like Peter's closer to his mom now than he probably has been since he was two, you know, just through this, you know. Yeah. And those are the things that I don't think necessarily come across when it's like, okay, you know, kid got hurt. And, you know, like I said, you know, I posted this a couple places online, was just thanking, you know, Bruce Porter or Rye for providing a helmet that fit and protected him. Yeah. I mean, he had no concussion, no break at all in his head. Impact safety armor, Mike Braxton for, you know, chest and back protectors that, his, you know, chest, he had absolutely zero internal injuries, right? No broken bones in his chest, no back injuries, you know, nothing. So, yeah, the thing is, it's like the chest protector looks like a crumpled piece of paper, but
that's what it's supposed to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like I go out there and I'm kind of stumbling over this, but you know, it's like people go out there and they have their chest protector in their gear bag. I'm like, dude, pick it up and stick it in there. If you don't have one, they're like $80.
Yeah.
They're custom fit. I mean, there's no reason not to have it when, you know, the cost is so manageable, but at the end of the day, you know, it's something that is such a distinction. And I have no doubt that, you know, that's why we have Pete, not to go down on a different road, but you know, it's just, I'm so blessed to have those relationships that, you know, someone could actually point me to Mike and someone could actually say, you know what, hey, take that helmet and go have Bruce fit it. Yeah. You know, he's at all the AMA races, you know, he's at all the Cycle World, you know, shows. Just stop by and, you know, have the guy fit the helmet. You know, it's just, you know, it doesn't take Bruce more than, you know, 15 seconds to size somebody, you know. So it's just that type of stuff that, you know, we're lucky enough to have people, you know, come up to us and say, hey, you know, kind of guide us in that regard. So it's been really good, you know, and I don't know, kind of stumbling, like I said, but you know, at the end of it, it's really just been a real positive experience and the worst thing in the world. So
yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
All right, Michael, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. I'm going to put some links up for the Facebook page. And everybody who's listening, go and become a fan of Peter, and you'll get all the updates.
On top of that, you can cheer up a 12-year-old.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and he actually does read all that stuff, and sometimes mom and dad post, but at the end of it, you know, he's in there, you know, going through that stuff.
Excellent. So.
Well, thanks, Jules. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great evening, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.